I never got along with my sister-in-law, Tabitha. She was my husband Derek's stepsister, so she wasn't even part of the family. But she'd always show up to events and treat me like garbage. I always complained to Derek about her, but he never did anything. He and Tabitha had a really weird, close bond. Over summer, Derek and I had a barbecue at our house. And of course, Tabitha showed up. Honestly, she looked amazing. She announced to everyone that she had just gotten a facelift. When I was alone in the kitchen, Tabitha came up to me and handed me a card to her plastic surgeon. She explained that her doctor was the best in town, and he worked really cheap. She said that the doctor had a 2-for-1 special, so she said that if I was interested, I could get a nose job for free. I can't tell you how offended I was. I knew that my nose was big, but I never had anyone talk to me so bluntly about it. I told her I wasn't interested, but she made me keep the card. After the barbecue ended, Derek asked me why I was in such a bad mood. I told him what his stepsister said to me, and of course he defended her. He said she was just trying to help. Even worse, he encouraged me to go through with the operation. He told me that I was beautiful just the way I was, but that I'd be a lot happier with a nose job. Things escalated into an argument, but eventually I gave in. All I wanted was to make Derek happy, and it seemed like he really wanted me to see the doctor. I called the number on the card and scheduled a consultation the next day. I wasn't sure if I would go through with it, but if the surgery was free, I could at least go down there and get some information. The next day, I drove to the doctor's office. It was in a really sketchy part of town. There was no sign out front, and the whole building looked like an old warehouse. I called Derek and told him I was having second thoughts, but he just told me to go in and have a look. That was it. So I walked inside and found a dirty waiting room. All the chairs were old and rusted. No one else was there except for an angry-looking nurse behind the counter. I was about to turn around and leave when the nurse called out, "Hello, ma'am. Did Tabitha send you?" I nodded. Instantly, the nurse walked towards me and grabbed my arm. She guided me down the hallway into a small room. Before I could say anything, she rushed out of the room and closed the door behind her. I looked around, and the place didn't look sterile at all. There was a table with old surgical tools in the corner, and the faucet was dripping water. I had a really bad feeling about this. I walked toward the door, ready to leave, but then the doctor entered. I couldn't see his face behind the surgical mask, but he looked very old. I started to tell him that I changed my mind, but he interrupted me. "Tabitha sent you, right?" he asked. "Yeah." He walked towards me and gently led me to the operating bed. "Sit right here, and I'll give you an anesthetic." This didn't make any sense. If I was here for a nose job, wouldn't he want to talk about it first? I assume I'd pick noses out of a catalog or something. I tried to stand up and walk towards the door, but he grabbed me and pulled me back down. "We haven't even started yet," he said. Now I knew for sure something was wrong. Tabitha had set me up. This wasn't a real doctor's office. I didn't know what was going on, but I knew I had to leave. The doctor pulled out a syringe and lowered it toward my arm. I frantically reached towards the table and grabbed one of the scalpels. I smacked the syringe out of his hand and then pushed the scalpel against his neck. "Tell me what's going on," I shouted. He stepped back and explained that he performed operations on a barter system. Tabitha got her facelift in exchange for some extra organs. She'd chosen me to donate them. I was horrified. I knew Tabitha hated me, but I never thought she'd do anything like this. The doctor drove the syringe on the ground, but as he was crouching down, I jumped off the bed and ran past him. I raced down the hallway while he shouted at me to stop. When I got to the waiting room, I saw the nurse standing guard at the entrance. She held up a syringe. Looks like we have another runner. If I tried to run past her, she'd probably inject me. So I picked up one of the metal chairs and threw it at her. She ducked out of the way, and the chair banged up against the front door. Using that as a distraction, I shoved past her and raced out. Then I got in my car and sped off. As I was driving back home, I called 911. I tried to explain what happened, but the cops couldn't believe me. I guess I sounded really frantic, but he told me not to make prank calls and then hung up. My only other plan was to go back home and tell Derek. He'd know what to do. But when I pulled into our driveway, I saw Tabitha's car parked outside. I couldn't let her see me. I parked far away from the house and snuck through the yard. Then I looked through the window and saw Tabitha and my husband drinking wine together. They were sitting awfully close. That's when I realized that Derek was in on it too. He knew that his stepsister was planning to get me killed. I watched in horror as Derek slowly kissed Tabitha. It made me want to throw up. I couldn't go home, and I couldn't go to the police. So I drove all the way across town to stay with an old friend from high school. I knew that no one would find me there. I decided to stay low for a bit. That would give me time to think about my next steps. Almost immediately, my husband tried to call, but I didn't answer. Tabitha called me too. Then I got a call from an unlisted number. I answered it and heard that doctor's voice on the other end. He told me to come back and give up my kidney. He promised that I'd survive with just one. I refused, of course. There was no way I was going back there. Then the doctor started screaming at me. He said that Tabitha had gotten a very expensive surgery and he needed a payment. I'm sorry, I said. But if you still need someone's organs, I think my husband is available. Then I hung up. The next day, I calmed down enough to go to the police. I told them everything, and it seemed like they believed me. They sent some officers to the address I gave them, but when they got there, the building was empty. There was no sign of any doctor's office. Derek kept calling me for the next few days, but then all at once, he stopped. About a week later, I saw on the news that the police had found a dead body in the river. It was Tabitha. Her face had been surgically removed. I guess they never got their payments, so they took back their operation. I don't know what happened to my husband, though. No one has seen him in months.
At first, I thought it was funny that a plastic surgery clinic was named House of Plastic Horrors. I thought that perhaps there was some kind of sick joke about how horrifying people's faces were before plastic surgery, and then it got better after. Or maybe it had to do with how puffy and horrifying a person looked immediately after plastic surgery, before it cooled down and began to heal. Then, I had no idea how very wrong I was about what it meant, and I was about to find out exactly why. My parents had always been against plastic surgery, but I had just turned 19 and thought of myself as a fully grown adult who could do whatever they wanted. But I lived with them, so getting the surgery under their roof was not going to happen. So I needed to get away, even if it was for a little while. Long enough for me to have the plastic surgery, heal, and then I could show my parents how it made me look much prettier than I was right now. I didn't have insecurities when it came to my face and body. Or at least I pretended not to. But I hated the way my nose was slightly crooked and how my jawline wasn't as sharp as that of Natalie Stone, a popular celebrity who was gorgeous. I didn't like a few other things on my face. So I decided I would be getting the surgery. Just not in my city. I had a cousin living nearby in the town of Carrollton. I decided to pay her a visit to her small town, and to my surprise, they had a plastic surgery clinic. It was named House of Plastic Horrors, and I could remember giggling with my cousin about the silly name before telling her that I wanted to get surgery there. She wasn't too ecstatic about it, but it wasn't like she could stop me. I didn't care that I was taking a risk. I hated the crook in my nose every time I looked in the mirror. So the next day, I booked into the place, ready to come out looking gorgeous. I was more excited than I was nervous, which was telling as to how badly I wanted this plastic surgery. I had a lot of expectations as to how the surgery was going to be, but it was nothing like the way I expected it. The building was on the outskirts of town, far away from civilization. I made a joke about how much this would have been a perfect murder scene, but I thought it would be too dark to share with the receptionist, who welcomed me in and told me to wait a little for the doctors. She assured me that they knew what they were doing, and then she gave me a few papers to sign before I set foot further into the facility. This was when I should have realized that things weren't as they were. I was greeted by the doctor, a man in his mid-30s, and I tried to explain to him exactly what I wanted for my face. But he didn't listen to any of what I had to say, and instead he responded, "I know how to perfectly take care of your face." It should have been assuring the way he said it, but he gave me such an eerie smile that suddenly made my stomach flip. I simply nodded. "Okay, well, how much does it cost?" "We can negotiate when we are done with you," the man said. This should have set me off, and I should have left the place or demanded further explanation. Heck, maybe I should have read through those NDA documents I had signed blindly a few moments ago, or I would have known what I had truly signed. The doctor and another female doctor led me into a secluded room, and they promised me with one of their creepy smiles that the room was soundproof, so I could scream as I wanted and no one would hear me. I laughed at the joke, and they laughed along with me. I had read about how plastic surgery works. I would be given numbing cream, so it didn't hurt much. They strapped me into a chair and told me it was crucial that I didn't move. One wrong move and I could paralyze my whole face. I sat still, not wanting something as terrible to happen to me. The female doctor's smile eased up, and it didn't look as sharp and scary anymore. If anything, she looked like she was pitying me. She asked me, "Are you sure you want this?" "I do," and I told her that. But from her eyes, it looked as though I had given her the wrong answer. The female doctor explained how she was the wife of the male doctor, and then proceeded to ask me for my name. "Maya," I said. She replied, "Well, you have such beautiful eyes, Maya, so green and pretty." I didn't know what else to say, and then she continued to ask me a few questions. She was distracting me from what would be happening soon, and I welcomed that distraction, because although I acted all macho, I was secretly afraid of this entire procedure. "The doctor will arrive soon," the lady assured me just as he walked in. He held such weird surgery tools in his hands that I couldn't even imagine how they worked on my face. And the one that caught my attention was the one in the shape of a spoon. I looked around for the numbing cream, but I couldn't see anything. I didn't know a person could be so naive and trusting as I was that day, as I sat there strapped against a metal chair that was biting against my skin. "This is going to hurt a little," the doctor muttered as he held a tool that whirred and spun in his hands. It had a sharp end that looked like it could pierce through my skin. By then, I wanted out of it, but it was too late. My pleas to leave fell on deaf ears. I didn't want the plastic surgery anymore, and I just wanted to go back home. It hurt, more than a little, and there was nothing I could do as the doctor drilled holes around my eyes at first. My screams bounced around the walls as the doctor used a spoon-like tool to gouge out my eyes one by one. He was careful not to harm my eyes, careful not to poke at them as he took them out of my sockets. I screamed and I cried, but it was useless. That was when they told me everything, that the papers I had signed earlier were me giving up my eyes, my precious green eyes, and every other organ that they could take out of me. But they wouldn't kill me, they assured me. But wasn't death better than this? They said I would be compensated with a bit of money. But how useless would it be when I couldn't even spend as much as I could? Next was one of my kidneys, and the horrible doctor performed surgery on me without anesthesia. I bled so much that my head was so dizzy, and I felt sticky blood that I couldn't see. I was terrified of what they would take next, and if it ever ended. Was it one of my limbs next, or two others? It didn't matter as long as I wasn't dead. They could take all my fingers if they could. I was living a nightmare, and I couldn't even get the plastic surgery I wanted. I cried and cried, but nobody heard me, and hope was dwindling with every second that I spent in this horrid place. I didn't even want to make it out alive in the horror of having to live a life deprived of so many of my organs. Life would be pointless. Despair filled my every bone as the doctors sawed away parts of my body that I would never get. This was never a plastic surgery clinic. It was all a farce and trick to get their hands on my organs and sell them for their own gain. And I was left to my own despair after everything. The doctors left no trail that the police could track. Followed. Malcolm whispered, eyes straight ahead on the lonely road that led to his house, and I felt the air shove out of his mouth with such sputtering force that betrayed confusion. I could not tell how long since he had observed a stalker on that Halloween night. I had been oblivious of it, trapped in the laughter and gist that we had shared. I was in love, and nothing else mattered in the world but the smell of my lover. Halloween night was just another liberating experience with Malcolm. The way he caressed me till I was burning with longing. He asked if we could take it home, and I replied positively without hesitation. Now, his tone was changed, and I noticed a slight shakiness in his respiration. I tried to turn my neck, and he nudged me with his shoulder. "Don't make it obvious that we know. I think he's been with us since the park." Malcolm said those words, and the smile on my face immediately dried up, turning into a sickening scowl of discomfort. My stomach tightened in knots, and the unease bolted up my chest. Malcolm's hands and mine wrapped tighter, and I felt my fingers being strangled by him. Malcolm had always made me feel safe, and I had never seen him panic. It was a terrible thing to be so vulnerable, I feared. "Who is following?" I asked quietly. "I'm not sure," Malcolm answered. He reasoned that it was some guy in a death costume and a scythe in his hand. It was dangerous to challenge such a person so late at night when we could simply escape them to the safety of his home where he could use his gun. I told him I was scared, and Malcolm turned my head over to his mouth. He planted a kiss on my cheek, and I used the opportunity to peek at the stalker. As sure as he had said, I saw the ghoulish figure, dressed in a long black cloak and a white mask, holding a scythe in his right hand, walking a few paces behind us in the open. The stalker noticed I was staring. He lifted his scythe, pointed the blade at me, and took the left into an alley, floating out of sight because his manner of motion was unnatural from how he moved. My blood froze in my veins in disbelief. Malcolm noticed my rasp. "What is it, Michelle?" My senses piqued interest, and I stood, rooted to the spot. I stared at Malcolm, and then at the empty pathway behind us. He followed my gaze, and he sighed in relief. "I think he stopped following us." Malcolm blinked. "Is this some prank?" I quizzed, scared as could be. "Prank? Why would I want to do something like that?" My ears whirred. Halloween horror manifested itself in my imagination, and a dozen of such scary situations ran through my mind. Perhaps the most haunting thought was the fact that the scythe-wielding prankster had been so menacing in that small second that I stared at him and he lifted his scythe at me. I knew it was no ordinary prank, and something sinister awaited. All of my senses pricked, and I could take no more of it. "Walk me back to mine," I said to Malcolm at once. All my desire for intimacy had been replaced with a solid sense of dread that made my heart sweaty. Malcolm's tongue was heavy in his mouth, and his lower lip hung open as he regarded me. My mind was a dizzied pool where fear swam in liberty. He took a deep breath. He shrugged, stepped back, and pointed the way back from whence we had just come. "You know, you may be right," he whispered. "It may be a prankster on this Halloween night trying to get us worked up, and you're taking the bait. I maintained my silence as I began to walk with Malcolm behind me. My eyes never left the corner of the road which I had seen the prankster enter, and the closer I approached, the more heightened my apprehension was. I was no more than a few paces from where he had disappeared from our sight when he suddenly re-emerged in the glory of his black cloak, tattered around the edges and splotches of red on his white death mask. He pulled his scythe up and I saw the blade catch the moon in a glint. It seemed bloodstained, but I was still in doubt. I stepped back in fright, but Malcolm, irritated by his ruined chances, stepped in front of me to approach the prankster. "Good prank for Halloween, homie. Can you scurry along now? You're making my girl uncomfortable," Malcolm warned. The death figure said nothing until Malcolm was close enough. Then, he struck. He whipped his scythe backwards and whipped the tip of the blade with all of the force that he could muster straight at Malcolm's head. Hell froze over, and reality played in a slow rhythm. I squealed in fright and flinched. Malcolm was far more reactive, and he only managed to get his hands up to block the blade from reaching his neck. The death figure's blade ate into Malcolm's palm and came out through the back of his hand. Malcolm let out a deathly screech of pain. The death figure moved over sharply to kick Malcolm down. Malcolm fell to his knees, and I watched in horror as he stomped in Malcolm's chest, lay him on his back on the hard ground. The death figure dragged his scythe out from Malcolm's palm and readied himself to land another strike.
"I am Death, and I have come to collect all your souls,"
he said in a guttural timbre, made even more cruel by the muffled effect of the mask he wore. I screamed when his scythe went up. He bent over and just about set himself to dig his blade into Malcolm's face while fear made me stiff. The gunshot echoed in the air, and another followed in quick succession. A poked hole appeared in the front of the mask, and it seeped with blood when the death figure stumbled forward, falling right beside Malcolm, who picked himself from the floor in a struggling bid to nurse his bleeding hand. "Wretched piece of ass!" A bloodied woman emerged from the path with a gun in her hand and moved over to the death figure on the floor. "Stabbed me with that crazy thing and left me for dead. Didn't see him coming." She let another shot into his body, and then another. She turned her attention to Malcolm, who hung his hands in the air to stop the bleeding out from the wound. "Halloween often brought out the crazies around the area," she said. The ambulance was on its way, as were the cops. "Tie up that wound before you bleed out," she advised as she sat down to nurse her own injuries.
My name's Peter, and I'm 30 years old. I used to have my own business, a small restaurant in which I was also the cook. Unfortunately, due to the lockdown, I was forced to shut it down. I was also spending a lot of time alone at home. I did have some savings, which allowed me to go through that hideous period without losing my house. Plus, I was using the internet to have some occasional online freelance jobs. Everything from translation, I speak Spanish fluently, to website management. I guess you could say I'm a natural entrepreneur, and a hyperactive workaholic, which was good for me. I was also using the internet for online social conversations, specifically Omegle. I spoke to some interesting women, and some weird dudes as well. Overall, I was having fun. At one occasion, I met a particularly odd woman. She claimed to be a psychiatrist. Her name was Marie, and she was eager to know about my personal life.
"I can help you if you wish to improve your mental health," she said.
I thought it was great. We exchanged numbers and agreed to meet. Of course, because of the quarantine, it couldn't be at a public place, so I invited Marie to my home, giving her my address. "Welcome, Marie. My apartment's a bit of a mess, but single guy spending too much time home alone. Since you're a psychiatrist, I'm sure you know how it works," I said, being sincere but also trying to break the ice.
"Hello, Peter. It's not that bad, don't worry. Plus, I think a man in your situation, if he has his house too organized and clean, it's probably not a good sign. Male loners who are like that, they often have some psychopathic personality traits and crave control. Many times they're also struggling with their own inner demons. Serial killers like Jeffrey Dahmer are good examples. When the police broke into his place, they noticed how tidy his house was. Even his fish aquarium was perfectly clean. At the same time, he had pieces of his victims inside his fridge and Polaroid pictures of his gruesome crimes kept inside a drawer. So, as you see, it's fine, Marie said. I offered her some coffee, which she gladly accepted. We had a nice chat about mental health in general, and I spoke to her about my doubts and fears. She said she also lived alone. Marie was about 50 years old, but she was passionate about her work as a psychiatrist, and the internet allowed her to keep working with her patients. Then, after a while, the conversation started to become a little weird. Peter, let's do an exercise. Look into my eyes. Don't worry, I'm not pulling off anything romantic. It's an experiment, so I can test your mental strength. It's really very simple, Marie explained. Now, since it wasn't anything bizarre, I decided to play along. At best, I could either find it funny. But as I kept looking at her and listening to her soft voice, I started to feel strange. It wasn't unpleasant, but I felt like my mind was drifting away from my body. I heard her speaking words in a language that I didn't know. Or at least that's what I thought, since I wasn't understanding them. Then she said to me, "Take off your clothes, Peter. We're going to get cozy. I find you very attractive." I didn't feel the same about her by any means, and so I wanted to refuse her proposal. But in panic, I realized I wasn't controlling my body anymore. Not even my speech, since I wanted to speak, but wasn't able to. Terrified, I felt like I was inside someone else's body, because in practical terms, I was doing exactly what Marie told me to. I can't really describe what happened in the next few minutes. Marie had her fun and did all she wanted to do to me. She lit a cigarette and smoked it, always looking at me with her big, eerie, creepy, but irresistible dark eyes. She took her time, and then asked me for all the information concerning my online bank accounts and credit cards. This time I was able to talk, but I was speaking what she wanted and not what I wished. Completely hopeless, through the internet, I transferred all my money to her. She made me do the transaction via multiple Bitcoin wallets so that the final recipient wouldn't be tracked. "You will only awake from your trance after 1 week. By that time, I will be gone. You will never be able to find me, Peter. I can't erase your memory, but it's a big world out there. And my Omegle account will be shut down as well. Besides being a psychiatrist, I'm also a skilled hypnotist. When I find a man who pleases me, I do what I have to do. I fulfill all my needs. Nothing personal against you, my dear. It's just my nature. You are a smart and strong man, even if a bit too trusty. You will be able to make more money. I'm sorry. Goodbye now." And just like that, she simply left my house. A couple of days later, I heard my cell phone ringing. Marie, or whatever her real name was right. I couldn't move. Fortunately, the next day I heard someone knocking on my apartment's door. It was my brother, Chad. "Hey, Pete, are you there? You didn't answer your cell phone yesterday. I was worried," he shouted. Then my cell phone started to ring once again. "I can hear your cell phone ring inside your apartment. Pete, I'm breaking in. I need to know if you're all right," my brother said. He was a strong dude, unlike my lock, and he broke in within a couple of minutes. "Pete! What the hell happened to you? Can't you move?" Obviously, I couldn't. Not even speak. Yet my eyes were moving, and I could see and hear. He took me to the hospital, and for the next 4 days, there was nothing they could do to bring me back, so to speak. Doctors kept me under observation, but they were completely puzzled and didn't know what was going on. I couldn't blame them. Then, as Marie promised, I slowly recovered the control of my body. I explained to the doctors, nurses, and also to my brother, who kept visiting me every day, what had happened. "That is unbelievable," Chad said. "Well, believe it. And she left me with no money.
I just hope I didn't catch any disease from her, I replied. For the next couple of weeks, my brother allowed me to stay with him and his wife. I borrowed some money from him, and as time went by, the quarantine was over, and I got a job as a cook. It'll take a long time before I can trust anyone again, especially a woman.